Chapter 53. The Communists in Budapest. On March 12, 1919, power in Hungary fell into the hands of another Soviet agent, Béla Kun, likewise a communist Jew. Lenin had earmarked Hungary as the East Central European springboard for Bolshevism. This time the Allies took notice. It mattered little to them when the communists massacred Germans, but it did matter when East Central Europe was being interfered with. The Allies regarded it as their preserve and that of their local allies the Czechs, the Romanians, and the Serbians. Clemenceau, however, saw the opportunity to negotiate with the new Marxist potentate from the Danube and his ambassador in Vienna to invite him to Paris. Wilson, Lloyd George, and Clemenceau decided to send a special delegation to Budapest to deliver the invitation officially. The mission was to be headed by South African Prime Minister Smuts, who traveled by private train to Budapest. Thus a luxury train would be crossing a devastated Europe of 200 million starving people to pay homage to the sallow-skinned Jewish tyrant of Bolshevik Hungary. Harold Nicholson, who was assigned to this mission, gave this amazing report from the time they arrived in Vienna. There the delegation was to wait for a communist delegate to give them permission to enter Hungary. I go to the Bolshevik headquarters. It is rather difficult to make them understand who I am and what I want. The place is crowded with people who want to obtain passports. Most of them are Jews fighting to get to Budapest. Finally, I am taken upstairs to the commissar, as he is called around here. He is a Galician Jew raised in the United States. He telephones Budapest and says, "It's okay, Béla Kun will be glad to see you." The next morning the delegation arrived in Budapest at the same time as 1,500 fanatics who had left Vienna to join Béla's Red Guards. Béla Kun appeared on the platform. He is a little man of about 30, his face is waxy and puffy, his lips are soft and wet, his head is shaven, his eyes are cunning and distrustful. It is the face of a sulking and insecure criminal. He is accompanied by a greasy little Jew clad in a moth-eaten fur coat and wearing a dirty green tie. It's his foreign minister. We start talking, but his German is difficult to follow because it is mixed with Galician and Magyar. They start to propound on what Bolshevism will mean for Central Europe: work and happiness for all, free education, doctors, George Bernard Shaw, suburban gardens, lots of music, and the triumph of the machine. I ask them what machine. He gestures vaguely in a collective embrace of all the world's machines. Béla Kun left and Nicholson started to take photographs. Fortunately, Béla Kun is leaving before my patience gets completely exhausted. I accompany him back to the entrance of the station. The Red Guards do not salute him. He stands still and looks. The engine driver from a local train gets down and walks toward Béla Kun. He says something I do not understand. Kun answers him in Magyar, the equivalent of, "Certainly, comrade," and gives him the cigarette he was smoking. The engine driver then picks up another cigarette, lights it with the one he had received from Kun. He then returns to his locomotive, proudly puffing his comradely cigarette. Béla Kun turns his beady pink eyes in my direction to observe if I have been impressed with this proletarian scene. Nicholson summarized the meeting. Béla Kun suggests we arrange a conference in Vienna or Prague between the successor states. Smuts wants him to come to Paris. Here was the Prime Minister of a British dominion inviting the Jewish tyrant of a communized country to come and negotiate in Paris, while not a single statesman had been called to express the needs of 60 million Germans. Neither Smuts nor anyone else in the luxury train that brought the delegation to Budapest had the slightest idea of what was going on in Hungary under Béla Kun's dictatorship. Nicholson managed to drag Smuts along on a tour of Budapest for which authorization had to be sought. Almost all the shops are closed. The city is unclean. Rain is falling on people who are emaciated and in rags. Squads of Red Guards move around holding coat hangers with various gifts. We met three or four of these squads of about 15 to 20 men armed with bayonets and carrying coat hangers, stolen in some restaurant. If they find an open shop, they go in and help themselves to the gifts they fancy, which they then hang on the coat hangers, boots, sausages, and red linen. All this is soaked with the rain. The sadness and poverty is striking. When Nicholson and Smuts returned to the train, there was a power failure, which plunged everybody into darkness. Bella Coon returned to the station. I managed to make him sign a paper where he promised to release all the English subjects he had put in jail. Coon appears suspicious and morose as well as fearful. Smuts speaks to him as if he were royalty. The Swiss and Spanish consuls inform us that Bella Coon's actions were far from moderate. To pretend otherwise would be absurd. The prisons are overfilled with people. The Red Guards are threatening and a massacre is feared. Bella Coon returned the next day. He arrived at 10 o'clock. Smuts hands over the draft of an agreement stipulating the occupation by the great powers of a neutral zone between Romania and Hungary. If he agrees, the blockade will be lifted. It is clear that Bella Coon is dying to accept. The signing of such a document would imply the official recognition of his government. He badly wants to agree, but he is suspicious and fearful. Grabbing the document, he leaves us, saying he has to consult with his cabinet, which actually means Moscow. He promises us an answer by 7 in the evening. In the afternoon, a reception was to be given to the Smuts delegation at the Hungaria Hotel. Bella Coon wishes us to have afternoon tea there. It is embarrassing, as I do not think the general would like us to go into a hotel. But they look so upset when we refuse that we accept the invitation. We realize as soon as we get into the hotel that everything had been carefully arranged in order to impress us. The lobby is full of people around little tables drinking coffee and lemonade. A band is playing Hungarian tunes. Everything is designed to show us that Budapest remains, despite Bolshevism, the merriest city in Europe. However, two serious mistakes have been made. First, each door is guarded by armed Red Guards and, secondly, they forgot to tell the people around the little tables they were supposed to talk among themselves. It is very strange. I do not realize immediately what is wrong. It is a normal sight to see people having afternoon tea in a hotel, but there is something fantastic and unreal. No one is talking, everybody is sipping their lemonade in total silence. If one looks at these people, one sees fear and an appeal for help as intense as it is silent. When they lower their eyes, the deadly silence continues except for the playing of violins under the watch of armed guards. It is quite evident that this collection of silent beings had been taken out of jail for the afternoon just to fill the lobby. I shudder. We leave as soon as possible. While we walk to the door, silent glances follow us. Bella Coon was to come back a fourth time to carry on the negotiations. Smuts had finally reached a formula whereby Coon would be invited to Paris to join the peace conference. Paris, however, would not greet Bella Coon. The Hungarians had had more than enough of Bolshevism and Bella Coon and had called in Romanian troops to help them kick out their oppressors. Bella Coon was run out of town, never to reappear. The Allies' exceptional display of affection towards Bella Coon was not unrelated to his Jewishness. Versailles was a kind of confidential Sanhedrin gathering where Bella Coon was eagerly awaited. Lenin's three Jewish dictators of Bavaria, Levin, and Axelrod, had similarly been wooed and fated by Clemenceau and the Allies, all the while they were massacring defenseless German civilians. Surrounded and invaded by enemies, the hard core of Germany was determined to resist. Noske was on his way to Bavaria.